to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting here with a veteran actor in our fair city by the name of Grant Byington.
Hello, everybody.
That's Grant's voice. Grant and I have a long relationship, and I met him soon after he moved here, but we were just talking about how he ended up here, and be so kind to tell everybody how you ended up in Portland.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was on my way to Seattle from Montana. I decided that I was going to be an actor. From my many, many professions that I had to choose from at the time.
Well, but there's also kind of a little bit of backstory, and what comes to mind immediately is you're meeting the Queen, and I'm just, you know, I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah, I met the Queen.
I met the Queen
as a boy soprano in a boys' choir that sang at the Calgary Stampede in 1972, I believe it was. And she was visiting the Calgary Stampede. And
as queens do.
As queens do. Mm-hmm. As the Queen of England does go to Canada. And I was there, and I was at the airport, and it's a funny story, but I had to go to the bathroom.
As
little boys do, and the Queen, the plane landed. We went to see the Queen get off the plane. That's what the choir went to see the Queen get off the plane, and I just couldn't wait any longer to go to the bathroom. So I went into the airport to go to the bathroom, and I was coming out of the men's room as the Queen of England was going into the VIP lounge. So I missed her getting off of the plane.
But got up close and personal.
But I got up close and personal with her, and Prince Philip ruffled my hair.
Oh.
And the only thing that I could say was, I am from Montana, which was the only thing that I could think to say to the Queen of England.
It was like an alien had come down from the spaceship, and yeah. I am from Montana.
And of course, I, you know, reached out my hand to shake her hand, and she did not take it, as the Queen does not shake anybody's hand. But who was I to know that? I was a 10-year-old from Montana.
And you were a touring professional singer at that time.
Yes, I was. Yeah, I toured around the country as a guest soloist for boys choirs.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this kind of network of boys choirs at that time. And I would sing in front of, I sang in front of the Jacksonville Boys Choir, which was a big boys choir at the time. And I traveled all over Canada, and sang a midnight mass in Mexico, things like that. I mean, and it was really because I was sang really loud in Sunday school, and my Sunday school teacher signed me up to sing in the church choir when I was 7 years old, and from there it just kind of snowballed. There was a boys choir, a famous boys choir in Montana called the Treasure State Boys Choir. I worked with them in Anaconda, Montana, which is where I'm from. And from there, I got guest shots all over the country, including a fill-in for the person who played Patrick Dennis in the National Tour of Maine, starring Ginger Rogers.
Wow.
Because he got the mumps. And the guy in Oklahoma City, where the kid got the mumps, knew that I could do the part and called me up. And that's how I started in theater.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
and
that's
from then on, you just wanted to do theater.
Yeah, because that was it. I mean, the experience of doing that in Oklahoma City was terrifying. Because it was just, you know, I was a fat kid, and they kind of shoved me into my clothes, and they pushed me out on stage, and I sang the song. Saying, you're my best girl, you know, and then they shoved me off, and that was like a weekend. It was like a weekend gig, and then I was back going to Butte, Montana, which is where the airport was.
Well, we are just now being poured this beautiful tea by David here at Hotel Deluxe, which is a great reminder that we're at Hotel Deluxe having
tea. Thank you, David.
At 3 o'clock on a Friday, which is a beautiful way to end a busy week.
Mm. No kidding.
Entertaining veteran actors.
Very busy week.
Yes.
Very busy.
Which actually, okay, so a tiny leap now, since you just made a perfect segue, which is what you're working on right now is a show at Lakewood.
That's right.
And tell us about it, because it's a beautiful, funny as all get out play.
It's a really amazing play. play called One Man, Two Governors, and it opens tonight. It's a week before Veterans Day.
Many actors would never do an interview on opening night, for heaven's sake. We are super lucky to have Mr. Byington here.
It is a workout, I can tell you that. It is a physical comedy farce. It's a retelling of The Servant of Two Masters, set in 1963, Brighton, England. I am the one man who has two governors.
So, also known as Servant.
Servant of Two Masters.
Right. So, imagine one master doesn't know that the guy who's working for him has another master, and he's trying to work for both guys at the same time without letting on that he works for two guys.
That's exactly right. That is the plot of the play.
That was not bad.
Although there's a lot of intricacies to the relationships of the two masters.
Balancing.
That's right.
It's a balancing act. And it's a very large cast.
Yeah, there's like 12 of us, I think.
And it's directed by another real
veteran actor and director,
just like you, director, actor, musician, the whole nine yards. Don Alder.
Mr. Don Alder, my best buddy Don Alder.
Right, and so you guys, how many weeks have you been rehearsing?
Well, you know, we had a much longer rehearsal period for this than we've had for other shows that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Our first rehearsal was like August 8th.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we're in November now. But we took like a month and a half off.
Mm-hmm.
I think we started in earnest about, I'm going to say 8 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were in pretty rough shape in rehearsal about 6 weeks ago. Somebody walked up to me and said, "We still have 6 weeks." And I thought, oh my God, that's great. I really can use that time.
It's fast moving. It's funny as all get out. I saw a production of it.
And the National Theater.
Laughed. I cried. It's funny, funny delightfulness. Perfect for the holidays to take people, you know, as a gift.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, and you want to talk about veteran actors. Listen, the cast is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's Gary Powell and John Morrison and Ted Schultz.
Oh, my gosh.
Tom Walton and Melissa Whitney and a couple of new faces in town from out of town. There's a girl named Kaylee who's here from Georgia.
Oh, wow.
And Roz Fell, who's a local actress who's an actual Brit who gives us notes on our accent all the time. And Burl Ross, who's an amazing physical comedian who has been in the Portland Revels for like 20 years.
Okay,
or like
is he
that.
Playing the character but keeps getting like knocked around?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
but
my Lord.
Don't give it away.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. It's so funny. It's so funny what happens to this guy.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, I don't want to say Three Stooges. It's not bad at all, but I mean,
it's a farce.
Physical.
Yeah, it's a physical show.
It'll just make you giggle.
Yes, it will. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant. You know, the National Theater, Nicholas Heitner worked with Richard Bean, who wrote the play, as a vehicle to create a vehicle for James Corden.
Right.
Who was, at the time, a TV star in England.
Right. And now is a TV star here as well.
Now is a TV star here. But he was in the History Boys at the National Theater, James Corden was. And they just wanted to do something with him to kind of bring out his talents. And it's a really, you know, it's an iconic performance. It's big shoes to fill, big comic shoes to fill.
Well, it was, I remember in the National Theater production that they did, as we were talking about the other day, this rockabilly as interstitial music between scene changes, and that you aren't doing that, but that you're doing lip syncing, which I think is interesting in light of what James Corden has become very famous for, the lip syncing in the car.
Right.
Which
we aren't
is really
doing
fun.
So the play has original music written for it, and we aren't doing all of the original music. We're doing some of it, but brilliant Don Alder had this idea to put the characters from the play in these kind of plot-appropriate lip syncs of music from the time. They're hysterical.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
What a fun way to give context.
And they cover these massive, The play is a huge undertaking for any theater, and it's really well done at Lakewood because they have a great facility there, and a great history.
Oh my goodness, the Tower of Sandwiches have arrived.
Look at that.
Perfect timing for Massive.
The Tower of Sandwiches.
What? There's some new things that
there
I never
are
saw.
New things, yeah, and we make them all in-house now.
What?
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
I'll show you what we have.
All right. David's all right, talking sandwiches now, so if you're thinking about coming to Hotel Deluxe for tea, listen up.
Do it.
We'll go over the sandwiches first on the bottom level of this. So we have a Tower of Sandwiches on the bottom. On the top right of the tower, we have a smoked salmon and caper cream cheese on rye bread. Beside that is chicken salad on wheat bread. Below that, we have prosciutto and apricot cream cheese on white bread. And the last one on the tower is cucumber and mayonnaise on white bread. On the sides of these towers, we have what's called a James Beard. It's a sweet Vidalia and seasoned mayonnaise sandwich.
That's
on white bread.
That's one of my favorites.
It's rolled in parsley, so it's got green all on the outside.
Isn't that
pretty? That's amazing.
Isn't that neat? I knew you'd love this.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
On the next level, we have our house-made scones. We have plain and black currant. They're an English-style scone. It means they're less sweet and buttery than the American-style scone. And that just leaves more room for our toppings over here. We have clotted cream shipped in from England.
Of course.
And blackberry jam that's made in-house. On the top level, we have all of our in-house treats. We have a blackberry linzer. It's blackberry jam and an almond cookie. We have a toffee date cake. We have a flourless chocolate cake with a little bit of Jacobson salt on top on a hazelnut cookie.
Mm.
And in the center, we have what's called a Victorian cake. It's going to be a citrus sponge cake layered with apricot jam, topped with apricot whipped cream, with a little marzipan rose, a toasted almond, and a little sliver of candied orange peel.
They are so beautiful. It looks like Christmas decorations.
This is very one man, two governors, too. If we hit, can we hit you with a plate and have you fall down the stairs?
You could. We might not let you back.
Only one interview per actor.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Enjoy. Yeah.
Is this crazy or what? Isn't it gorgeous?
It's amazing.
All right, I'll pause our recording so we can take sandwiches and not make too many clinky clank sounds.
All right.
No one's ever asked David if they could bonk him over the head with a plate before. So thanks for that.
You bet. His reaction was great.
It was.
Yeah. There's a restaurant scene in the play where I am serving both of my governors.
Simultaneously. And neither of them know.
That's right. It's very important.
And what are you serving them, may I ask? Not James Beards.
Soup, vegetables.
Oh, of course you're serving them soup because that's dangerous. You have to serve dangerous food in these situations.
Right. That's exactly right.
Hot soup.
Crown of lamb.
Oh, boy. I bet something spill.
Oh, well, you'll have to come and see the play.
I'm going to come see the play.
Yeah. We've gone through several different kinds of meatballs.
Oh, that's kind of fun, actually, because they need to be able to do some stunts, right? You've got stunt balls.
Stunt balls. Yeah. I have to eat 9 of them.
For real. Okay, now that's interesting, because I remember my dad telling me a story about Ruth Gordon when she was doing Matchmaker, and that she has to have
she had a huge
chicken dinner, and I think my dad told me that they made it somehow out of spun sugar. So that she could eat and talk simultaneously without fear of choking. How do they deal with the balls?
We've gone through several different kinds of things.
And?
I can tell you what failed miserably.
Whoa, golly, what?
Falafel.
Oh, that would be choky.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I had this brilliant idea that I could get malted milk balls.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because they would kind of
melt.
Right. So I went to New Seasons to the bulk aisle and I got these. Big meatball
balls.
Looking malted milk balls. Big balls.
I feel like we're on Saturday Night Live.
And
sweaty balls?
And I bought 12 of them because there has to be 12 of them.
Right.
And I have to eat 9 of them and serve 3 of them. And what I didn't know was that the malted milk ball was covered in peanut butter.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
It's horrible.
Oh.
Horrible. Failed miserably.
Oh, well, you've got to, you know.
Yeah.
There is no try, only do.
Last night, we settled on donut holes.
Oh, okay. And then so they're brown.
Yeah, they're brown and round, and they go down relatively easily.
Right. Oh my gosh. Okay, now seriously, that's a lot of donut holes every
night. That is a lot of donut holes.
So that's now.
But compared to the rest of the things that I put my body through, the donut holes are a pleasure.
Are you? Wow. Okay. So what comes to mind next in the torture department?
Well, I. I get grabbed in the balls a lot, Suzanne.
Wow, and not the donut holes.
Not the donut holes, that's exactly right.
Wow, that's a kind of a theme now.
Yeah.
It's a ball show.
I know. It's, well, we, you know, 4 months ago said this is all about testicles.
Because
everybody gets kind of grabbed at one point or another.
In various parts of their body that are...
You know, the masters, the servant of two masters, the masters are relatively sexual with the servant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a class thing, and it's also a statement on the relationships, personality types, and so a lot of grabbing.
So who plays the two masters?
Tom Walton and Melissa Whitney. And those are my friends from the Northwest Classical Theater Collaborative, which used to be the Northwest Classical Theater Company.
Right.
And they are, you know, known mostly as Shakespeare people.
Mm-hmm.
But Melissa's done all kinds of shows out at Lakewood for many years, and this is Tom's first.
Oh, interesting.
And he's, you know, it's great because they're like old friends because I've been in so many shows with them.
To have a show that is going to be as complicated as I'm sure this one is, it must be very comforting to be on stage with people you trust and you know, and as you said, so many veteran actors, all of whom are, you know, running at a certain speed.
Yep. Well, and you know what's other, also interesting about this is that another guy in the play is named Brad Bolconis, and he is a local playwright. And I have read a couple of his plays as part of the Fertile Ground Festival and some of the other, he's a PDX playwrights guy. And so he's one of the waiters in the play, and he's also in the ensemble. He plays like five different parts.
Oh, wow. Well, and I'm sure he must enjoy, I mean, you're also a writer, which is good information for everybody, I think. And you are a writer by trade, and then also you're writing a novel.
I like to say I'm a writer by craft and a writer by art. It's like an arts and crafts kind of situation. Yeah, I'm working on a memoir, a second memoir. My first memoir is done. That kind of covers my time between the time I was in Anaconda, when I was born, when I was a little boy in Anaconda, until the time that I moved to Missoula, where I went to school at the University of Montana. And then the second memoir covers the time from the University of Montana to moving to Portland.
How much more do you have to go on the second movie?
You know, it's an interesting thing that nobody will ever want to read or ever want to buy. But it's short stories. They're short stories, and they're based on the concept of there's these 10 minutes in your life where your entire perspective shifts. And I think that those are very private, and they're very important, and they're very, I want to say formative to the kinds of people that we become. And they're also very... there's something very lonely about them. And so it's a collection of those 10-minute scenes. They're just...
Like the first book.
The first book, right. And there's some, you know, decisions. When you make a decision about the way that your life is going to go, or, you know...
You come to some conclusion about how life is.
What's going to happen to you?
Stays with you.
Right.
An epiphany.
It stays with you, and it really might have something to do with the situation that you're in, or a bit of awareness that you come to, or maybe even it's something that somebody says to you. You know, there's a scene in the second book where I realize I'm standing on the street corner during the homecoming parade of the University of Montana Grizzlies homecoming. And I'm standing on the street corner, and one of my friends says, "You're a bully," to me. And I didn't realize that I was being a bully, you know? And it changed the course of my life. You know, just that one thing that somebody said to me that made me kind of think, oh my God, I am that guy that picks on other people.
Okay, that's so strange because, you know, that's just not how I see you at all. And so there you go.
Well, thank God.
But so interesting too is that how much power do we really have over shifting that kind of personality, those types of qualities, characteristics that we carry.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I'm working on the play at Artist Rep right now, and it's Civil War, and I keep coming to Lincoln's comment, listen to your better angels.
Right.
And I love that comment, you know, just continuing to think about now, who do I want to be?
Right.
Who am I?
Right. Who do I want to be?
Right.
That's exactly right. And I believe that my journey has been a little bit unique in that I was born a duck out of water. I mean, you know, I was an artistic kid in a town full of smeltermen. You know, and I happened to be raised in a family that really honored that and really honored my independence and my differentness, and encouraged me to be independent at a very young age. I mean, you know, for my mom and dad to put me on a plane with a voice coach and send me to, you know, Oklahoma and to Canada and to Mexico speaks a lot about them recognizing the kind of person I was.
That's pretty remarkable. I mean, I know only because we've been friends for a long time how much you loved your parents.
Yeah.
And that I never got to meet them because they had both passed away before you came here.
Right.
But that's so wonderful to know that.
Yeah.
You know, because as a parent, I know, you know.
Hardest thing. I think
it's hard.
Well, and I'm not a parent.
Right.
Right. And I will never be a parent, which I'm fine with. But but I think the hardest thing to do is let your kids be the people that they are.
Oh, I know. And I hate to. I mean, I'm sure if my daughter will listen to this, which she may, or both of them, you know, but that's kind of a struggle. You have dreams for your kids. You are who you are. And then by, you know, you have children at a young age where you're just really, or for me, I should say, figuring out who the heck you are.
Right.
And then you're all of a sudden another person, and it, you know, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's very big. And, you know, if you're smart about it, it informs your artistic life.
Yes.
You know, in a way that doesn't damage you.
Right.
You know, that can go either way.
Yes.
You know, your past experiences can feed into what it is that you end up creating in a very positive way,
mm-hmm.
Or they can ruin it. And that is, I believe that that is a choice that you make.
Yeah.
You know, this can ruin me, or this can make me better.
Right.
Right? And I just always been an optimist.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was just talking about this with a friend of mine, and storm's going to come, right?
Right.
And us humans seem to want to gravitate toward agonizing over these storms instead of looking to the other side and saying, oh, there's the other side.
Right.
Here's the pain. Not to negate or to not pay attention to the pain, and because life is suffering. But I am also an optimist.
Right.
And
interesting that you say that. Another friend that we have in common, who is a veteran actor,
mm-hmm.
Sarah Lucht,
oh, right.
Once told me that she admired the fact that I live my life without compromise.
Mm.
And she said, to her knowledge, only people who have been at the absolute rock bottom know what that's like.
Mm.
And even when I was probably at my lowest, which was probably right before I made the decision to move here,
mm-hmm.
I realized that things were never going to be that bad.
You know, and then I would say my lowest so far, not, you know, things are going to be bad in life, I know that.
Right.
It was right after my dad died.
Absolutely.
And you think, oh, this is the worst. This is the worst.
Right.
This is it. This hurts so bad. And I would imagine your loss of your parents and, you know, who knows, other epic events that you think, I guess also taking heart in the fact that during those hardest times were also times that I probably felt like, I remember thinking it's kind of Wizard of Oz when everything goes Technicolor.
Right.
Where suddenly you think, wow, this is bad. And everything kind of comes into relief as a result.
Yep. It sharpens. The focus sharpens.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When my dad died, I was warming up the cast of Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I was the dance captain and the co-choreographer in Missoula, Montana, and it was final dress, and I had a part to play and a big thing to do throughout the entire evening. And the phone rang backstage, and the stage manager came up to me and said, "It's your sister on the phone." And I was like, why is she calling? And the thing that happened was the most memorable thing that happened in those moments was I kept falling down. I just felt, I sincerely felt like the ground had disappeared from beneath my feet. And the only thing I could do was sit on the ground and just sort of sit there. I mean, my dad had been sick for a long time. I knew it was going to happen. Everything was, you know, all of that was like foretold when the phone rang. But what I could not ever imagine was that the ground beneath my feet just dissolved. Yeah.
Yep.
And then it was like 6 months later that my mother became ill, and she died shortly after that. So it was one right after the other, which, you know, which I think is the case for a lot of people's parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was 24 mm-hmm. years old, 30 years ago. Now, of course, my friends who are in their 50s mm-hmm. are going through that now.
I know.
And it's a difficult time.
Hot water?
More hot water?
No, I'm fine.
I think I'm good too. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's just what it is, and it's so fascinating. That William Finn song comes to mind, "When the Earth Stopped Turning," mm-hmm. the ground coming out from under you, gravity
right.
departing.
Adrift, just
adrift.
For just a moment. I mean, it really was a moment. Right. You know, I like to say, one of my favorite things that I like to say is, this is a really bad minute in a lifetime, in a really long life.
Right.
You know, and you know, that's every kind of setback that I've ever had. That was what I thought.
Right. And then taking into account the gravity of right. those moments,
right.
and then it sets you up for appreciating the beauty. You know, waking up certain mornings and you think, wow, this is beautiful. There is a lot of beautiful out there.
Right.
Especially right now, when it feels like there's not so much, there's a lot of not so beautiful things happening.
Right. Or I get to do something incredible.
Yeah.
You know,
make people laugh.
Yeah. How many people? You know, it's just I really do feel like being a performer is a gift.
Yes.
And having a great play in front of you to perform is a gift that not a lot of people get to experience.
Right.
You know,
well, you've taught me oodles on that note, because we did a show. Well, we've done a lot of things together, but
yeah, absolutely.
And I love that that funny quote that we always quote when it's an opening night and you're really scared. And how did it go? Well, nobody spit up blood.
No, I didn't spit up blood.
I didn't spit up blood. Because tell that story. It's funny. I mean, just that kid. I thought.
Well,
that was
I was on the road with the Missoula Children's Theater. Actually, you know, I just saw a play, and I was reading the program, and somebody in the play worked for the Missoula Children's Theater.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I was like, oh my God, I wonder if they know.
The story.
I was performing. The Children's Theater model is really interesting. Right. The Missoula Children's Theater model is interesting. You go into a town on Monday, and you audition local kids, and you cast 60 of them to be in the play.
60.
Yeah, at the end of the week. So you rehearse them through the week, mm-hmm. and then at the end of the week you do the show, and then you and your partner pack up the truck and go to the next town and start again on Monday with a new group of kids.
Wow.
And it's a really...
It's
a really educational experience as well as, formative for... It was... When I was in Anaconda growing up, I was in Missoula Children's Theater shows.
Mm.
So there was that, coming full circle. Anyway, I was performing Cinderella, and the littlest kids, the group of four-year-olds, they had a little song that they sang.
Makes me giggle just thinking about it.
About being pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
The song was called Pumpkin Pie, which was very appropriate for the season, by the way. And they had these little pumpkin costumes. They were so cute. They had like little hats that had little stems on them, and they had little pumpkin costumes that made them kind of all one shape and size, and little black pants for legs. And I sang this little song with them. And part of my duties as one of the actors in the show was to line them up and get them ready for their song and get them out on stage and rehearse their song with them all week. And so we were in this town and I was standing there with my 15 pumpkins, and there was one pumpkin who was just so chill and so relaxed, and we were backstage, and he was just like taking it all in, and he was kind of smiling and, just fine. And right next to him was this little pumpkin who looked like he was about to explode. I thought, when it's one of those, when you work with kids, you're like, do you need to go to the bathroom? Are you going to vomit? What's going to happen here?
Just like the plays that we do.
Yeah. I looked at them, and I like to kind of get the pumpkins pumped and ready to go. And I would say, are you guys ready to go? Are you ready to go? And the little relaxed pumpkin said, yeah, I hope I remember all the words to my song. And the other pumpkin, who was kind of frenetic and scared to death next to him, said, I hope I don't spit up blood.
And now I would love to meet this kid now, Wouldn't it be fun to know what the devil that kid's doing?
He's probably 40 years old now.
Oh, my God.
It's
so much fun to hear you talk about theater making, because you've been doing it a very long time, mm-hmm. and you have so much joy in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
that's
love it.
One of the reasons I've really enjoyed working with you, because you have a lot of joy in it. And in my growing up, and you know this about me, I would say there's a little more fear in me, and that I dance around with that a lot, and I think, and maybe because I grew up in a place where, I was growing up in that kind of Hollywood world where I mistook the pressure that my dad, who was an actor and kind of exuded in life, as a kind of commentary on the business or on the act of making art. Because when I remember him making art, he was very joyful, but then he wasn't so joyful in other areas, so maybe it got conflated.
Well, I think this, first of all, I like to think of that in terms of stakes.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes for your father were much higher than they are for me.
Yeah, but that said, they're just, it's just really interesting, and as I've had this good fortune to work on being a theater actress in Portland for the last, 28 years, even working on Civil War Christmas is a great example. It's a great company of people, and I'm enjoying the camaraderie and the telling of a really wonderful story, and that is very joyful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's fun and exciting, and I don't know. Go come see theater, because it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody has a story to tell, but when you see it in 3D in front of you, it's a lot richer experience.
Yeah, and never the same twice. And
I love it. It's interesting. The other day, somebody said, "What are you going to do next?" I was like, never getting on the stage again.
But you've said that before.
Yeah, I have.
I've heard you say that before.
That before.
Yeah. I have to say, it's so much fun to see people engaged on stage. It's so exciting, and just makes your pulse rise.
It's, I feel like the experience of watching a performance, a live performance, especially in Portland, when where you have this amazing ability to have these really intimate experiences. You know, I love working in the Shoebox Theater.
Oh, I know, that just blows my mind. I mean, yeah. I've seen you in several plays there, and it's your, I mean, it was like doing when we did Light in the Piazza at Portland Playhouse.
Right, absolutely.
That, and you are literally
you're
in the
right
corner
there.
With people,
right.
And it's petrifying, but once you get over that kind of, there's something really beautiful about it. It's that ability to be with people.
Right. There's no distance between you and them.
Yeah.
And it makes the story more vivid to you and to the performer and to the person in the audience.
Yeah. I mean, and you've worked in all sorts of venues, from tiny to humongous.
Yeah. Yeah. you know, we're working in Lakewood, and that's a big proscenium stage.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's got a fly loft, and it's just like, it's a real impressive facility.
Mm-hmm.
And Don keeps telling people that they just have to shout, you know? And I am, you know, I have a really strong voice. I always have had a really strong voice, and so it's never been a problem for me to project my voice. But what I'm watching, some of the other actors are having a real kind of challenge with it because performance spaces are now smaller, and you know they're mic'd, they have microphones on them, and that art of saving yourself and not shouting at home, and, you know, taking care of yourself,
and steaming,
being fit. They don't need to do that.
Right.
You don't need to do that when you're in a house that has 32 seats in it.
Right.
But you do when you're in a house that has a big empty space and there's 220 seats in front of you. And
Lakewood has 220 seats.
Yeah, 220 seats.
That's neat.
Yeah. But, you know, most of my musical experience, which happened before I moved here,
it's like big.
Was in a theater that had 1,200 seats.
Right.
Two balconies. And it was in the 80s. There was no body mics happening there.
So, okay, you're writing, directing, acting. What would just rock your world? Something either to do new or something you'd like to do again that you'd like to, you know, keep working on? Or what kind of floats your boat in the creative world, you know, after you take a big long nap after this dude's over? When does it run until, by the way?
It opens tonight, November 4th, and it runs until December 11th.
Oh, for heaven's sake. So you've got lots of time to take people for the holidays.
Plenty, yeah.
Thursday
absolutely.
Through Sunday. But look on the website at lakewood.org, and I'll also put the website on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
There's like a Wednesday night to make up for Thanksgiving, and there's a couple of doubles. You know, I think there's a Saturday double. I'm not, you know, I don't really pay that much attention to
it.
Right,
I know, you just show up.
I just get in the car and go there.
That's what I do. Same thing. I'm like, okay, there's a show tonight.
Yeah.
I know, because they told me.
So there's a couple of things, frankly, that that I've always wanted to do again.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely is there something that you want to do twice.
Oops.
Oops. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tiny spill.
Don't get wet.
No.
You know, there's a couple of musicals, actually, that I've always wanted to do.
Oops. Yeah.
Because I played Arthur in Camelot when I was 24 years old.
Oh.
And I've always wanted to do it when I was the right age to do it.
Aww.
Because, you know, I think I kind of have a different perspective
now. Oh, gosh, yeah.
So there's that. But there's also a show that I've done twice in Montana that I think would be gangbusters here. It'd be a great show for you. It's called the 1940s Radio Hour.
Oh, yes.
There's a big band on stage, and it's a radio script.
Yes.
A radio show.
Oh, I remember that.
From, like, 1942.
Mm.
It's just a unique theatrical experience. And you know, here we are podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we lose track of what an amazing thing radio is and was.
Right.
You know, and what that big band music sounds like when you're actually in the room with a big band.
Right. Yeah. I had that good fortune of working with Norman Layden quite a lot with the Oregon Symphony, and you know, he was such a wonderful big band leader. And to hear that music played full out, it just envelops you, you know.
Norman's amazing talent for arranging.
Mm.
You know, it's just, I really miss that.
I do
really
too.
Miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might.
So hopefully, hopefully I can talk a producer into doing that show.
Hey, Mr. Producer.
It would be great. It would be great to do that.
Yeah.
It would be great to do that. Be great to do it.
Yeah,
it's a very and it's also a Christmas show,
mm-hmm.
and it's also very patriotic because it takes place in 1942 mm-hmm. in the midst of the Second World War.
Right.
So it's a great show. It's a great show, and I think a lot of people don't do it because you need a big band.
Right. It's right.
But there's plenty of big bands.
Oh gosh, yeah. There's some great big bands here in town.
You can really always get one.
That's right. Well, I guess. You know, we've done the veteran actor talk. Unless there's something we missed. Have we missed something?
No.
We missed some sandwiches.
If there's anybody out there that's thinking that they would be, you know, like to try being in a play, do it.
Oh, that's a great thing to say.
Just do it.
Yeah.
You know, this is an amazing place.
Yes, you're right.
And there's amazing people. You know, I have to give a shout out to my beautiful wife.
Oh, that's Laura. Actually how we met.
That's right.
She was one of the first directors I ever worked with.
Well, and she cast me in my first show here,
mm-hmm.
And is the reason that I stayed. Mm. Would have gone to Seattle, and you know, there were where would we be then?
I don't know. I can't imagine. Can't imagine not having you here.
You know, it's there's a really great nurturing community here.
There is.
There really is, you know.
And it's a great way to be together in a time or during this time where we tend not to be face-to-face with people.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Be together in a way that's enjoyable and interesting. And
it's really easy to get lost into your TV and into your
phone
and into your computer and, you know, into your distancing relationship with entertainment.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I think we live in a place where it's a really easy way to break that cycle and to see a show.
Right.
You know,
anything.
When I first moved here, there was, five or six companies maybe?
Right.
Doing shows?
Right.
Producing companies?
Now.
There was nobody doing cabaret.
Mm-mm.
And now there's so many to choose from.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a fun way to express yourself.
Right.
Fine. And there's oodles of classes, needless to say, and writing classes and improv classes and singing. And
it's a rich culture that we have here.
Mm-hmm. And hip-hop.
And hip-hop.
That you can take.
Hip-hop at noon.
Northwest Dance Center, which I can't take right now because of rehearsal, but I'll be back.
You want another sandwich?
Yes, I think I do.
Look at you. You swiped one of those chocolates.
I'm a swiper. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And go see the show at Lakewood.
Go see the show. Go see Civil War Christmas at ART.
Yeah, go see...
See the Singing Christmas Tree, because it's an experience.
That's right. So many. There's a lot of good
it's
things
the
to see.
It's the holiday season.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well, until we meet again, which will be next Monday on Adventures in Artslandia. Goodbye, Alana Beth.
Bye, Alana Beth. Yeah.